Apple trees are being engineered quite a bit. Papaya in Hawaii and Thailand have actually been put into commercial development with pretty extreme consequences for the farm, the organic farmers in Hawaii of the papaya, for example. Many of them have had their trees contaminated and can't grow papaya anymore. And we can expect to see the same thing with the pulp and paper trees and the other fruit trees as they become developed, as they become commercially developed, which we're trying to stop, and you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed that we'll be successful, is because trees have a lot of wild relatives, and they have pollen that can travel, pollen and seeds that can travel for hundreds if not thousands of miles. And so, you know, we're talking about extreme contamination threats. And that's one of the reasons I put up the world map. Researchers at Duke University, I attended a conference there on genetically engineered trees last November, and researchers at Duke University had some pollen modeling that they'd been working on around their experimental forest in North Carolina. And what they found was that pollen from trees in North Carolina had the potential to spread all the way up the East Coast and into eastern Canada. And because of the wind currents, that was how they expected the pollen to move. So even though there are no test plots actually in Pennsylvania, and there are no test plots actually in Vermont, there are lots of test plots in South Carolina, North Carolina, you know, Georgia, etc. And so those test plots, which are mainly pine and poplar, you know, those pose a very serious threat to the pine and poplar in the wild forests of the entire eastern seaboard. There are also lots of test plots in the Pacific Northwest and a variety of trees out there, the upper Midwest of the U.S. So you can imagine, we're talking about huge contamination threats from these trees. And right in Pennsylvania, when you're talking about fruit trees, Cornell University is doing a lot of research and test plots with apple trees. And, you know, Pennsylvania has millions of apple trees. You know, there's obviously a real threat there as well. So this is a real problem and something that we are trying to keep from going commercial. Right now it's all on test plots, so we're trying to say we don't want them commercially developed and we want the test plots removed because even the test plots are too risky. We just don't know enough about what the long-term consequences will be of genetically engineering trees, and especially if the pollen, that GE pollen, contaminates native trees. What will be the result of that? Or commercial, excuse me, non-GE fruit trees, what will be the result? We just don't know. The current status of GE tree development around the world, the U.S. is very, you know, pushing pretty hard to try to get GE trees commercialized, although they haven't set a target date yet that we know about anyway. They recently sequenced the poplar genome down in Tennessee. I think it was Tennessee. It was the Department of Energy with an initiative with some of the universities down there. And so they've completely sequenced the poplar genome. So, and that's one of the main pulp and paper trees that they're interested in because it grows very fast and is easy to pulp. So that's a big indication that poplar tree commercialization is potentially very close at hand. The other one is pine. The good thing about pine is that the pine tree genome is about 140 times as long as the poplar genome. So that sequencing is going to be quite a bit in the future. And even though they've got the thing sequenced, it really doesn't mean they know anything about it. They figured out the order of the CATG, but they don't really know exactly what that means. And as Suzuki points out in the film tomorrow night, that's one of the big problems, is they just really have no idea what they're doing, and that who knows what the consequences will be. In Chile and Brazil are both interested in getting commercial plantations of genetically engineered pulp and paper trees in the next year to 2 years, probably mostly pine and eucalyptus in those countries. And Chile is considering itself the model for the world for pulp and paper, so it's easy to see that they want to get very involved in the genetic engineering of trees, potentially even being an export facility, creating clones for export all around the world. In Brazil, similar. And what we've seen in Brazil with the soybeans, if you've been following any of that, is, you know, genetically engineered soybeans were approved in Brazil last year. And since then, just been dramatic deforestation of the Amazon for planting of soybean fields. And, you know, that's, if that's any indication, the approval of genetically engineered tree plantations is likely to even, you know, accelerate the deforestation of the Amazon even more. So that's a really serious problem, and one that we're hoping to make some inroads into in the near future. In China actually has commercial plantations of genetically engineered BT poplar. And they're the only country that has commercial plantations at this moment of pulp and paper trees that we know about. And the estimates are anywhere from 1 million trees to 2,500 hectares worth of trees throughout 10 provinces of China. They're not keeping records of where they are. They're basically just sending them out there. And it's really a giant experiment to see what's going to happen with these trees. And because they're BT trees, and I'll get into BT a little bit more later, you know, we're talking about insect resistance, trees that kill insects, spreading their genes into native forests. And that can be, you know, as you can imagine, have some pretty serious consequences.
What's a hectare?
A hectare is 2.5 acres. Anywhere but the U.S. pretty much uses hectares. It's the metric measurement. And the reason that they did this is pretty interesting. They were having a problem with desertification, so they were trying to reforest the edge of the desert, basically, to stop the deforestation from moving toward the cities. And Beijing was having all of these problems with sand and dust and things in the air. So they were trying to stave off this desertification. So they put in an industrial plantation monoculture, all the same species of tree. And, you know, as those of us who are ecologists could have predicted, they got infested by insects and most of the trees died. So, you know, I would think that they would say, okay, well, that didn't work. Maybe we should put in a mix of native trees and, you know, try to create a more healthy ecosystem. But no, the UN came in, the UN Development Program and the UN Food and Agriculture Organization came in and said, hey, let's put in genetically engineered poplar trees and that are engineered for insect resistance. Then they won't die from insects. So that's what they did. And they've been putting them in for the last, I think, 2 years. 2.5 years they've been planting these trees all over the place. So that's in one instance where we're not too happy with the UN. The other instance where we're not too happy with the UN, which Oren's going to talk about a little more later, is in December of 2003, they approved genetically engineered trees to fight climate change. Saying that, you know, we can get them to sequester carbon faster, so they'll offset global warming, and I'll mention later why that's, you know, absolutely the reverse of what will actually happen. So what are the main traits being researched? And I'll try to be relatively brief. There are 5 main traits that are being researched, and these, I'm focusing mostly on pulp and paper trees here because we've really just recently started getting information about fruit trees, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on fruit trees. One is herbicide resistance, same as crops. You know, we want trees to be able to withstand inundation by toxic chemicals, mainly Monsanto's Roundup. Insect resistance, which I just mentioned, engineering BT into trees so that they will kill insects that try to eat the trees. Sterility, and this has 2 purposes. One, to try to stop the spread of pollen and seeds and so on, but also to... if the trees are not reproducing, then they'll be growing 30% faster. So faster growing trees. Reduce lignin. Lignin is the fiber in trees that helps them stand upright, but it's also what you have to take out to make paper. So if you can reduce the lignin, then you can make paper more cheaply, and also using less toxic chemicals. So industry is working on reduced lignin trees. And 5 is disease resistance. And that's mainly a fruit tree thing, but it's also in some, like, walnut trees. And that's been a big problem, as I mentioned, with the Hawaiian papaya. And what happened there was they engineered trees to be resistant to the ring spot virus, And this bizarre side effect was that they all developed black spot fungus. So now they're every 10 days spraying massive fungicides on these papaya, on these genetically engineered papayas, because they had, you know, because they're now resistant to the ring spot virus. And as I mentioned, contaminating the organic papaya and basically wiping it out of Hawaii. So those are the five main traits, and I'll go back now and examine them all a little bit more closely. Herbicide resistance, as we've seen in agriculture, we can expect to see the same thing in forestry. Making plants, crops resistant to herbicides has resulted in up to a threefold increase in the amount of herbicides being used on those crops, which is kind of common sense. If you make a crop resistant to the herbicide, people are going to naturally want to put more on it. And so we can imagine the same thing to be true in trees. This contaminates water, it contaminates soils, it impacts local communities. In Chile, we were down there meeting with Mapuche people, and they are experiencing the toxic effects of herbicides sprayed on the industrial tree plantations, not even GE, just regular plantations. So you can imagine if the herbicide spraying increases, those toxic impacts are going to increase also. Roger Sejo, who works for an industry think tank called Resources for the Future, wrote a report where he estimated that using the herbicide tolerance gene in trees would increase plantation establishment worldwide by 200,000 to 600,000 acres per year over what would have already been established. So we're talking about massive increases in plantations over the, you know, they're already be expanding all over the place, wiping out native forests, wiping out farmland, and he's talking about this will increase it even more. Insect resistance, as we've seen in agriculture again with the BT crops. Putting BT into crops means you rapidly get insecticide-resistant insects, insects that are resistant to BT. Those insects that are resistant to BT breed with other insects resistant to BT, and quickly you get BT-resistant insects. And the BT isn't useful anymore. It also kills beneficial insects like ladybugs and lacewings that eat the problem insects. They are toxically affected as well and often killed. So now you have, not only are you creating BT-resistant superbugs, you're also wiping out beneficials. Which is going to result in, as you can imagine, a great big increase in more toxic pesticides. It also can result, and this is Ricarda Steinbrecher from EcoNexus, and she's going to address more closely the issue of sterility, so I'm going to just briefly touch on that when I get to that one. The use of BT can also displace insects into native forests nearby. These plantations are always very close to native forests. In many places, they've replaced native forests, some of the native forest. So one of the concerns is that these insects will be displaced into the native forest. They can't use the plantation anymore, so they'll just be pushed into the native forest, causing infestations in the native forest. And finally, the last concern about BT is that because every cell of the tree contains this BT toxin, the pollen also contains the BT toxin. And in the Philippines, doctors have found that Filipino agricultural workers working around BT corn have actually been experiencing immune system reactions and allergic reactions because of inhaling the BT pollen. Now, when you're talking about pines in particular, they pollinate extremely heavily. And so you can imagine if this is BT pollen, and there's a community right next door, which often there is. In Chile, the communities many times are completely surrounded by pine and eucalyptus plantations. This is going to definitely have some kind of problem for the communities, which hasn't even been identified yet. They're looking at commercializing these things, and they haven't even figured out what the impacts on human health are going to be. Sterility. Making trees sterile, well, this means a few different things. One, it means that there's no food for wildlife. There's no fruit, nuts, seeds, nothing for wildlife to eat. Sterility is unreliable. Sterility researchers will admit that they can't guarantee it 100%, which means that these traits will inevitably spread into native forests. So now we'll have native forests that are killing insects, that are resistant to herbicides, that have reduced lignin, and so on. And as I mentioned, sterility means that trees can grow faster because their energy is not going into reproduction. And this means desertification, rapid desertification of soils. Already we're seeing with eucalyptus plantations and industrial monoculture plantations that they very rapidly diminish groundwater and soils. And if they're growing even faster, that trend is going to be happening even more rapidly. So that's a very big problem, as I mentioned, especially in the global south where people rely on agriculture and they rely on, you know, growing animals and so on. If there's no water, they can't do that. If the soils are depleted, they can't grow crops. So it's a big problem. And the next one is reduced lignin. Reduced lignin means, lignin is what protects a tree. As I mentioned, it's also what has to be taken out to make paper. So reducing lignin in trees means it's cheaper to make paper. It also means the trees are more susceptible to disease, insects, animal browsing, and environmental stresses like wind, heat, cold, etc. So you can imagine if that trait escapes into native forests, now we have native forests that are easily susceptible to animals, wind, insects, disease, so on. You know, we're talking about potentially tremendous tree mortality in native forests. Not to mention, what's that?
Wobbly trees.
Wobbly trees, that's what they called them in I think the London Observer called them wobbly trees. Wobbly, you can imagine trees. These trees flopping back and forth. And the other thing about reducing the lignin is then the trees will rot faster. And both of those things are important about the reduced lignin trait because of going back to what the UN decided with GE trees being able to be used to offset carbon emissions, to sequester carbon and offset carbon emissions. If they are, in fact, going to be threatening native forests with massive death and they rot faster, there's no logic around using genetically engineered trees to store carbon. It just doesn't make sense. GE trees, in addition, the other thing about the carbon offset issue, the EPA and the World Resources Institute did a study that found that native forests in tropical regions sequester 4 times the carbon of plantations. So they're talking about transforming native forests into plantations, which is actually what's happening on the ground. You look at satellite images, you see that that's in fact what's going on. And they want us to start putting in GE trees in these plantations, and you have them going in the exact opposite direction that they need to be going to stop global warming. If they want to stop global warming, A, they have to stop putting out the emissions. That's what they don't want to do. So they're looking for any possible way to not have to stop putting out the emissions. And planting trees is one of the ways that they've decided they're going to do that. But putting in GE trees is going to mean more carbon emissions, not less. So I think that's, in a nutshell, long nutshell, what I'm going to talk about. Just real quickly, though, I just wanted to mention, I talked about it a little bit, but these GE trees, because they're being targeted mainly for the global south, as well as the southeast U.S. and the Pacific Northwest U.S., really poor rural areas is what is being targeted for these plantations. And so we're looking at impacts on poor rural communities. And as I mentioned, that's soil and water contamination. It's loss of water and desertified soils. And in many of these communities rely on native forests for their cultural practices, for their livelihoods, for their shelter, for their medicine, for their food. All of these impacts, all of these things that they will lose if these plantations replace the native forests or damage them because they're contaminated with GE pollen. And finally, the last thing I want to mention is the ownership concerns. In Canada, people here have probably heard of Percy Schmeiser and the Canadian Supreme Court ruling against him and in favor of Monsanto. When it came to, was he responsible for having contaminated canola in his fields? Well, those legal precedents could apply also to trees. It hasn't been tested in the courts yet, but there's no reason to think that the same precedents that apply to canola won't also apply to trees. That means that if you have a bunch of forest on your land, and that forest gets contaminated by pollen from a plantation, you know, 100 miles down the road, who's going to own those trees? Well, the courts may very well say that Monsanto or International Paper or whoever patented that gene owns those trees. And so does that mean they have the right to go onto your land and cut those trees down? Probably. That also applies to public lands, to wilderness areas, to national forests, to national parks. You know, if those trees in those areas get contaminated, you know, will they belong to Monsanto or International Paper? Will they be allowed to put in, will they force the government to put in roads so they can go take out their trees? And then there's the lose-lose side of that, which is that, okay, let's say you don't take out the trees, then you're leaving them there to continue to contaminate more trees. So it's, there's really the only sensible thing to do about genetically engineered trees is to stop them altogether, to get them out of the test plots, to ban them from being commercially developed, and it's got to be global. It can't just be in the U.S. and Canada, or it can't just be in Mexico. It's got to be global, because tree pollen just does not respect state boundaries. So
was going to be used for producing, there was just no way. Like, you can't place a gene at a spot where we know it would not cause harm. Even if we would know how to place a gene, that we wouldn't know, like, on all chromosomes and DNA, where is the safe spot?